Well, we kick off this hour by taking a trip to our favorite Michigan think tank, the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, and an issue that is right out of today's headlines. You know that House Speaker Andy Dillon wants to take all the public employees in the state and put their health care coverage under one umbrella. Problem is, a lot of them are union members, and they are protesting. We know that Mayor Dave Bing wants to make some changes in Detroit to avoid municipal bankruptcy. The problem is, he's got to convince unions to accept wage cuts and benefit cuts in order to stop the bleeding. Well, the Mackinac Center says, think about this. Union officials have an effective veto over what elected officials are trying to do to run our governments. And that should change. Paul Kersey is Director of Labor Policy for the Mackinac Center and on the other end of our line. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Frank. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. How are you?
Oh, all right.
Well, this is becoming a bigger and bigger issue as we see the problems that have been predicted for years, the unsustainable promises of long-time benefits for public employees that have not been funded, by the way, either, coming home to roost. And that's just for starters, because public employees have gotten good deals through their unions based on negotiations and contracts that were set by, say, the UAW and other unions. You're saying it's time to revisit something, and that is the unionization of public employees.
Well, there's a common thread in both of these stories, and that's the Public Employee Relations Act. That's a law that we passed in the mid-60s under the Romney administration that extended to government employees' collective bargaining. And what that statute does is it affects just about everything that government does. It affects budgets because as much as 80% of your budget, depending on who you talk to, is driven by employee costs, costs of wages and benefits. It affects how government goes through its operations. When you have a work rule written into a collective bargaining agreement, that affects government operations. That affects how government implements policy. And it also affects the politics in this state, throughout this state. PIRA, the way it's set up, you have the typical contract will include an agency fee clause. That effectively guarantees tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to government employee unions without a whole lot of accountability for how that money is spent. Very little of it is really needed to represent employees, as little of it as a third in one case. With all that money there, a lot of it goes into politics.
What do you mean? Into political action committees and supporting candidates?
Get out the vote campaigns, political propaganda materials that can be distributed, whole range of different things. What we've done, whether we meant to or not, is we have created a permanent government-supported, taxpayer-funded lobby for big government.
Which is not what anybody intended.
I would hope not.
Yeah. PIRA, as you say, the short for the Public Employee Relations Act, is simply a law. Could it be changed?
Yeah, it could be changed by the legislature. It could be changed, repealed, amended by a standard legislative bill.
And the political fallout from that would be great, but...
Well, the potential benefits for Michigan citizens would be tremendous as well. We've gone through and estimated that if you were, for instance, to get employee benefits for government employees in Michigan, in line just with what's common in the private sector in the Midwest, which is something you'd be more likely to be able to do if you didn't have collective bargaining, or if you reformed collective bargaining so that it fit better with the public interest, you could save several billion dollars annually.
Does the PIRA law also apply to local municipalities and their employees?
Yes, that's the primary people it's directed to. County government, local government, school districts. It's also been applied to the state colleges and universities.
So let's just say that our legislature came up with a huge dose of courage here, and because I can foresee a great deal of opposition to this, I think you can too.
Yes,
politically, What would happen if they totally repealed PIRA and just put public employees on the payroll as an at-will employee in every case?
Well, first of all, collective bargaining is not a constitutional right, at least not for government employees. I know that's kind of a radical notion to take, but it isn't. There are states that do not have collective bargaining for government employees. Virginia is a great example of that. That's a state that's doing quite well, as a matter of fact. There are other states that leave it entirely to the discretion of local officials. Local officials decide whether and under what conditions to bargain collectively. Now, this is a drastic step, and maybe we don't want to, maybe Michigan, it would be a hard sell to make politically. But we need to understand that collective bargaining is not a constitutional right, at least not for government employees. It is a privilege that we have extended to government employees. It is a privilege that we can limit so that it fits in with the public interest. And it is a privilege that we can withdraw if unions start to abuse it. And I believe that is starting to happen.
So you see the abuse as a bigger factor than the cost here?
Well, let's look at what's happening in Detroit right now. You have a city that's facing a $300 million deficit, a city that is liable to be bankrupt within a year. And you have unions that are dragging their heels on concessions that really do need to be made. I think that for Mayor Bing to be able to reduce wages, keep people on the payroll, keep delivering essential city services, but bring the budget in line, that would be the smart move for him to make in Detroit, and that's the one move that he's not allowed to make.
All right, Paul Kersey is with us from the Mackinac Center, proposing that we undo this Public Employee Relations Act, that we no longer allow public employees to be represented by collective bargaining in the state. It would be a tough sell politically, but what do you voters feel? 800-859. Paul, can you stick around, by the way? I didn't
Certainly.
Ask you this. You want to take some questions?
Certainly.
All right, 800-859-0957. That's always our number here on the Frank Beckman Show, always keeping you the best-informed audience in all of radio. We're back with your calls for Paul Kersey from the Mackinac Center in a moment. Paul Kersey from the Mackinac Center is with us on the show, taking your phone calls now on his idea that we ought to repeal the Public Employee Relations Act, not have collective bargaining for public employees like they do in Virginia. Let's go to Josh in Flint to lead off the conversation. Hello, Josh. Say hi to Paul Kersey.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Frank. Thanks for taking my call. The question that I have really has to deal with, and I don't want to identify the company that I work for, but let's just say that we're one of those type of companies that when we look at unions, we realize that our culture allows us the ability to kind of avoid a unionization of the workforce in that we have a pretty open-door policy so that if there is a grievance, someone can come and air it. The problem that I see that you're going to fight at the state level with these public unions is that you have to change the culture of the government to be more open so that they can hear those grievances. That way they don't have the need or feel the need to have another voice voicing their concerns. That's just a comment, and I'll hang up and listen to what you guys have to say.
Thanks. All right.
Well, there's a couple of things I'd say to that. First of all, private workplace is very different from a government workplace. Just because private employers are very different from government. Private employers don't charge taxes. They don't have sovereign control over a geographical description. They compete for customers. They have different pressures, and so they react to union pressures in different ways. The other thing I would say is that there are other mechanisms you can put in place to protect employee interests. You can run a civil service commission. We used to have those in Michigan. We still have one at the state level. And you can have a neutral arbiter that's trusted by all sides that can determine what the working conditions are going to be, what the work assignments are going to be, how the wages and benefits and how the discipline is going to be run. The other thing I would say about that is, even without a union, and without a formal collective bargaining process, that doesn't mean that that government employees are going to be helpless. A government employee lobby group is certainly going to be a formidable one, if nothing else because they know how the government works and where the pressure points are better than anybody, because they work with this stuff every day. A government lobby group, even in the absence of collective bargaining, is going to be a very formidable lobby. So with or without collective bargaining, government employees are going to be far from helpless.
All right. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Livonia next. Ken, welcome into the Frank Beckman Show. Say hi to Paul Kersey.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I'd like to say that I totally agree with everything you said. In fact, personally, I'd like to take it a step further, but that's not what we're talking about today. When you look at the condition of the national, state, and local economy, and you have labor unions out there that have the nerve to either threaten a strike or to go on strike, there is absolutely no justification for that. And it just shows that, number one, they don't get it, and two, they got too much power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. There are lots of reforms that, short of abolition, that could do some real good. One of them would be an effective strike penalty. What I would recommend to the legislature, if they're not going to rewrite PIRA completely or abolish it, what I would like to see them do is change the process for dealing with a strike, so that collective bargaining rights are suspended and the union involved is decertified for a period of, say, 3 years. That would be the term of a typical collective bargaining agreement. And basically what that would do is it would change the incentives for union officials. They will know that if there is a strike that they call, or even a wildcat strike, you will lose the privilege of representing employees. You will lose the union dues from that for a period of several years. Under that rule, there would be a clear message sent to union officials: do not call a strike, do not encourage strike talk among the employees that you represent. We cannot let you win a strike. We will not let you win a strike. You will lose, and you will lose severely. That is the process that I think we should put in place. We're dealing with strikes.
Right now, the penalties for a public employee strike are not very severe, are they? I think of Oakland University, where the teachers are on strike, the profs are on strike out there,
mm-hmm.
and it's only later you'll be able to file suit against them, and there may be penalties, but they're not severe at all. They have no real teeth, do they?
Again, collective bargaining is not a right. We can withdraw it where it is being abused, and an illegal strike is probably the ultimate example of collective bargaining privileges being abused.
All righty, Ken, appreciate the call. Thank you so much. We'll go to Richmond. And, Mike, you're next here on the Beckman Show. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
I remember approximately about 2 weeks ago that the teachers' union, I guess, or the city workers were protesting in Detroit. And Mr. Bing has came out and told them that he's got to start cutting jobs, or they got to take some type of pay reduction or furlough days. Now, is this the same thing that I'm trying to put them both together as far as this health care? Now, the health care is going to put limits on doctors and things like that of their pay. And isn't that the school teachers? They're protesting against one, but they're okay with another. Is this how we make the unions too powerful, to where they destroy their own city or state because of their own, I don't want to say greediness, but, you know,
their own self-interest.
Yeah.
Well, what Speaker Dillon is proposing is that all government employees throughout the state, whether they're county, city, or public schools, will be put in a single health care plan that would be arranged for and run by the state. And at the same time, you know about the situation with Mayor Bing and the financial crisis that's developing in the city. The common thread in both of these cases is PIRA, which gives unions the power to bargain collectively. They bargain for benefits in the case of a lot of school districts in particular that are too generous and are unsustainable over the long term. In Detroit, they have contracts in place that cannot be set aside. Mayor Bing must ask them to reopen those contracts and renegotiate. In both cases, what we're dealing with is the consequences of rights that were granted to union officials under PIRA and rights that have been misused.
Would the Dillon proposal help alleviate some of the problem that you've cited here with PIRA?
Well, it would help with one particular problem, which is benefits that are out of line with other states and with the private sector. As I mentioned before, if we could get government employee benefits down to a level that is typical for private sector employees throughout the Midwest, the state could save billions of dollars annually. So, yes, it would go along. It has the potential. The devil will be in the details with the Dillon plan. This is something we're watching very carefully. But the potential for substantial savings really is there, and it would go a long way towards correcting one of the problems that has come out of PIRA. It has to be said, though, that the Dillon program would still leave unions with tremendous political clout and tremendous reserves of funds from which to mount political campaigns, including political campaigns to overturn the Dillon rule. So it's a partial solution to one particular part of the problem, at least potentially, but it would still leave a lot of other aspects of PIRA in place that we would need to deal with.
Paul Kiersey of the Mackinac Center with us, talking about the Public Employee Relations Act, how it might be changed or even eliminated to save money here in Michigan and in our local communities. Mike in Gregory next up. Hello, Mike.
Excuse me. Good morning, Frank.
Morning.
My comment basically is, and I've felt this way for 25 plus years, there should not be union representation for any employee that's paid by taxpayers, and it includes teachers and garbage workers and all this stuff. And I know that gets a whole lot of people up in arms, but in the defense of this is, I work for a company. Oh, actually, I'm an independent contractor under an individual contract, and there's thousands of us worldwide. Work for one of the companies, six best operating in the world, year after year by Fortune 500 magazine and Forbes and so forth. The point being is we have individual contracts. If there's ever a dispute, there's a panel process that we go through, and most of our differences are handled on the local level in each of our local facilities around the country, around the world. So, you're talking about tremendous amounts of money being spent foolishly when you could give the state employees tax credits to invest in their own retirements, in their own health care program. These are the things that, in my opinion, will change the way we think and the way the government will save money in the long run.
All right, Paul, did Mike here co-write your paper on this?
No, pleased to meet you, Mike. Well, I think it's important to understand that government is not like a for-profit business. We have supported unions in the private sector for Ford and for the automakers and for truck companies and private sector firms for years in this state, and that's perfectly understandable. But one of the things I get into in the paper, and I would invite your readers to look at it, it's right up there on our website, www.mackinaw, and that's Mackinaw with a C at the end, mackinaw.org. One of the scenarios I go through is that if you get a union that is making a demand that isn't economically feasible, in the private sector, they know what their situation is. They have to maintain their profitability. They need to maintain their competitiveness. An employer is much more likely to step up and say, no, we just can't do this at this time. With government, there's at least a short-term way out. There's always the possibility of raising taxes, and you can be sure that at least in the short term, if you raise taxes, you'll generate more income that can cover the cost of the employee raises or the work rules, whatever it is that the union's demanding. And at the same time, again, because the unions have all this vast pot of money without a whole lot that accountability for it, they can provide political cover. So there's a short-term way out for government employers that is not available for private sector employers. That means that unions are more likely to win at the bargaining table, even if they don't have the right to strike.
All right, Mike, appreciate the call. In Waterford, Bill, next up. Hello, you're on the Frank Beckman Show.
Morning, Frank.
Morning.
I'm having a hard time understanding this class warfare. what's wrong with working men and women having a decent wage and fringe benefit package? When CEOs and millions of dollars are given to them, you always say it's class warfare. And yet, when the working men and women who spend the money, who make the economy hum, want a little bit more, it's always a problem. And I don't understand that.
You know, if you look at the report, I don't think I used the word class once. Class warfare simply is not the problem here. The problem here is a process that has derailed government. You've got a law that allows government employee unions even to set aside sections of local statutes, local ordinances. So you've got government employee unions that have a sort of veto over the public's own representatives or the public itself. If you pass a referendum, you've got a collective bargaining process that can set aside local charters, local ordinances. Collective bargaining, if it's going to be done for government employees, needs to conform with the laws that are out there, with the local ordinances and the local charters, not the other way around. But this isn't about class conflict. This isn't about telling employees they have to accept substandard wages and benefits. This is simply about saying we need to have, if we're going to have collective bargaining in the state, we need it to be done in a way that it promotes the public good, not the other way around.
All right. Appreciate the call, Bill. Appreciate all of our listeners who joined in the conversation. We'll have open line conversation next hour on the show. Paul Kersey, thanks so much for the time. Again, your paper on collective bargaining for public employees available at mackinaw.org. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, and go blue tomorrow.
All right, go blue indeed.